The next day, Frank and Tony sat on the back bumper of the ATUV as Sarah and Mac lowered their helmets down over their heads, locking them in place. "How do you copy me?" Lynn asked over the comm set.
"Loud and clear,"
Frank assured. "Tony?"
"Ditto,"
Tony responded, as he gave her a thumbs up. Maria came strolling up from the waterline, carrying a test kit.
"The water seems pretty normal," she announced. "A little saltier than Earth's oceans, and with a few elements the test kit cannot identify, but otherwise it's fairly safe. I wouldn't drink it, though."
"We don't plan to,"
Frank replied, as Sarah and Laura began stuffing rocks into the men's utility pockets to act as ballast against the buoyancy of their pressurized suits.
"These rocks don't seem very heavy," Laura observed, as she finished stuffing them into Tony's pockets.
"Holy crap,"
Tony said, as he struggled to get up.
"Try standing up with them."
"Safety lines are ready," Mac announced.
"Are you ready?" Lynn asked, over the comm set.
"No, but let's get it over with,"
Frank insisted, as he attempted to rise. Mac grabbed Frank's left arm and helped him to his feet. The suit was unusually heavy and difficult to move in, having been designed for use in zero-gravity conditions. And the extra rocks they had tied to their belts and stuffed in their pockets to counter their buoyancy only made it worse. After helping both of them to their feet, with one person on each side, they assisted Frank and Tony down to the water's edge. Behind them, Lynn carried the two floats Frank had rigged to carry their comm-set transmitters on the water's surface. Connected by a 30-meter comm line to their helmets, the floats would enable them to communicate with each other, as well as with Lynn on the shore, since their comm sets would not work underwater. Taking one careful step at a time, the group made their way down to the water. The ocean was calm, the waves seemingly mild as they lapped gently at the sandy shore. Wading into the water to assist Frank and Tony was more frightening than they had anticipated. The water was cold, and the underlying currents were stronger than they appeared on the surface. The fact that none of them knew how to swim and had never even seen an ocean didn't help. Wading in thigh-deep, Sarah and Laura quickly tied the safety lines to Frank and Tony and then retreated to shore. Mac handed the tow cable from the ATUV's winch to Tony, then patted him on the helmet to wish him luck. Tony looked over at Frank.
"Are you sure this is going to work?"
he asked through the comm set.
"I was 5 minutes ago,"
Frank admitted, as he took his first step forward. He reached down to his chest control pack and added a little pressure to his suit, causing it to balloon slightly.
"Are you as nervous as I am?"
Tony asked.
"Let's see. Dry mouth, palpitations, clammy skin. Yep, I think so."
Frank looked at Tony, then back at the sea. Lynn and the others were now back at the ATUV, wondering why Frank and Tony hadn't gone in yet. Only Lynn was wearing a comm set and could hear the chatter between the two of them.
"What are they doing?" Maria asked.
"They're, talking over their entry strategy," Lynn answered, unconvincingly.
"Looks more like they're having second thoughts," Laura observed.
"Man up and get wet, you chickens,"
Mac taunted from the shore, even though they couldn't hear him through their helmets.
"Mac?"
Maria scolded.
"They can hear me," Mac defended.
Just then, Tony put his right arm up in the air and raised his middle finger. Lynn and Sarah looked puzzled as they looked up to see what Tony was pointing at.
"What does that mean?" Lynn asked.
"It means he heard him," Maria answered, as she smiled at Laura and smacked Mac in the chest with the back of her hand.
"Wuss,"
Mac jeered. Frank and Tony started to move forward, taking small and careful steps. Gradually, they shrunk away until only their helmets were above the water. Maria had Frank's safety line, and Laura had Tony's, while Mac was paying out slack on the tow cable. Frank's breathing became rapid and shallow as the waterline crept up his faceplate. And then, with one more step, the pastels of green and brown transformed into brilliant fluorescence in every imaginable color.
"Oh, my God!"
Frank exclaimed, his breathing becoming erratic.
"What is it, Frank?"
Lynn inquired.
"What's wrong?"
"It's incredible,"
Frank gasped.
You wouldn't believe this. The colors!
Frank looked around excitedly. Everywhere around him were vividly colored plants, swaying in the currents. The sound of his suit's ventilation fans became more prominent after he had submerged. It was strangely quiet under the surface, so much so that Frank became aware of his own breathing, forcing him to try to exert some sort of control over his respiratory patterns.
The visibility is excellent, Frank announced, as he looked over at Tony to his right. How you doing, Tony?
Fine, he answered joyfully over the comms.
Man, this is unbelievable.
You said it.
Guys?
Lynn interrupted.
Maria wants to know if your suit temps are holding steady.
Tell Mother Maria to stop worrying, Frank teased. We're doing great, right, Tony?
You bet. Okay, guys, just keep your mind on the task at hand, Lynn urged.
Party pooper.
And remember, those are spacesuits, not dive suits, so take it slow and easy.
Frank, I just saw a huge fish over there. It was red and gray and yellow, and it had long fins on it. It had to be at least a meter long.
Hey, all I want to know is, did it have any teeth? And if so, did it look hungry?
Frank laughed. They continued on their trek across the ocean floor. After about 50 meters, the sand began to give way to coral and rock. Another 50 meters, and the rocks grew into mountains and canyons.
Hey, Frankie, if we don't find that pod pretty soon, we're going to run out of rope,
Tony warned.
We're getting pretty deep here. We may run out of tether for our comm boys as well.
This terrain is getting a little difficult to move across.
Frank stopped and looked around, scanning from left to right. He tilted backward slightly, looking up at the surface of the water.
The visibility is getting worse the deeper we go.
Frank looked at the markings on his comm boy tether.
We're about 15 meters down right now. We must be losing the light.
How the hell are we going to see anything?
Lynn, about how far out are we?
Frank asked. Lynn went over to the tow line and checked the markings. There were colored bands painted onto the rope every meter. A blue ring indicated 1 meter, red was 5, yellow 10, and white 50. The set of lines nearest the water were 1 white, 4 yellow, a red, and 2 blues.
Frank, you're about 190 meters out.
It should be only a few meters away, Frank said, as he looked about.
We should be able to see it from here.
Try moving laterally. Maybe something is blocking your view,
Lynn suggested.
Good idea. Tony, you move right, I'll move left.
Copy.
Frank sidestepped slowly to the left, continuously scanning for the missing pod.
I've got it!
Tony cried.
2 o'clock, about 20 meters.
Frank moved quickly over to Tony.
Where? I don't see it.
Over there. Wait for it. There's something moving in the water in front of the light.
Frank waited, staring through the silent, murky water. Then it came. 2 flashes before it disappeared again. Then another 2 flashes.
That's it. We see the pod strobe. We're moving toward it now.
Moving across the ocean floor was more difficult now. They had to pick their course through canyons between the reefs. And they had to think about their tethers as well, to avoid getting them caught amongst the rocky coral. 5 more minutes, and they were there. The pod was sitting against the side of a coral shelf at a slight angle. It had struck the shelf on the way down, breaking away large portions of coral that now lay scattered. The main shoots were drifting harmlessly in the current behind and above it.
Tony, go topside and disconnect the main shoots. We don't need the drag. I'm going to open up the control panel and see if I can activate the collar.
I'm on it.
Tony climbed up the side of the pod, using the ladder rungs built into the hatch faces. It was tough going, especially while pulling a tow cable behind him. He had to hook the cable onto one of the rungs, use both hands to pull himself up 1 step, and then move the cable up to the next rung. Meanwhile, Frank removed the retaining screws from the control access panel on the other side of the pod. Once he got the plate off, he punched in the code on the keypad to gain control of the system. After his command code was accepted, he scrolled through the short command list
until he found the command to inflate the collar. Good thing they made it waterproof.
I'm ready down here, Tony. How you doing up there?
Tony had just finished detaching the last of the main chute lines.
Stand by,
he said, as he pulled the tow cable up to one of the chute line hook eyes.
I'm hooking the cable up now.
Frank watched from below as Tony slipped the hook around the eye and spun the locking collar down tight.
Okay,
Tony announced as he gave the cable a test tug.
The cable is secure. I'm coming down.
Tony moved down off the top of the pod, making his way down the side. He jumped the last meter, floating down gently to the seafloor.
Okay, I'm down.
Frank depressed the enter button. There was a hiss of pressurized gas as the cover plates blew off the lower edge of the capsule, just above the heat shield seam. Slowly, the collar began to extrude from the sides of the pod as it inflated. As it neared full inflation, the capsule began to right itself. Dust floated up as it was pushed off the seabed. Then, the pod rose upward, leveling off about 3 meters above the seafloor.
Would you look at that? Frank boasted. Lynn, it worked! The pod is floating a few meters off the deck. Start reeling her in!
Why isn't it going all the way to the surface? Lynn wondered.
I'm not sure,
Frank admitted over the comms.
The flotation collar may not be fully inflated.
Can you fix it?
No chance,
Frank insisted.
This will have to do. It's high enough to clear the rocks, at least.
Lynn turned to Mac. Start the winch, Mac. Slow and easy. Mac started the winch, slowly winding the cable in. The nose of the ATUV sat down slightly as the cable became taut. As the cable came up off the seafloor, the pod began to tip over. It stopped at a 45-degree tilt as the buoyancy of the riding collar fought the cable's attempt to pull it onto its side. The ATUV's nose sank deeper as the weight of the pod pulled against it. The winch complained at the pod's mass, whining loudly as the motor labored under the stress. The pod moved slowly across the seafloor as Frank and Tony walked along beside it, each with a hand against the side of the collar, gently guiding it over the peaks of the mountains lining the seafloor.
Keep taking up the slack on our safety lines as we come in, Frank instructed. I don't want to get tangled up in them as we go.
As they walked in, Tony heard a strange sound coming from somewhere inside his suit. It was a squishing sound. That's when he noticed.
Frank, my feet are wet. I think I've got a leak somewhere.
Don't worry about it. We'll be back to shore soon.
I've got water up to my shins. I don't like this.
Okay, just stay calm. We'll be out in 10 minutes. Just keep an eye on it, okay?
Back on the beach, Lynn was listening to Tony's concerns.
Something is wrong. Tony's got water in his suit.
How much? Maria asked.
I'm not sure. Up to his shins, I think.
Lynn and Maria exchanged worried glances.
If he gets too much water in his suit, he's going to get hypothermia, Maria warned.
The pod continued its journey toward the beach, with Frank and Tony acting as its escorts. But Tony was having a difficult time.
Frank, it's up to my knees. I'm having trouble walking.
Try dumping some of the rocks,
Frank suggested. Tony reached down and began pulling rocks from his pockets, dumping them on the ocean bed as he made his way into shore.
It isn't helping, Frank. It's mid-thigh now.
Don't worry, I'm coming.
Frank fell back behind the pod and moved across to Tony, taking care to keep his safety line from tangling with the pod or with Tony's line.
Stop taking up our slack a second. We're stopping.
You want us to stop the winch?
Lynn inquired.
No, keep it going.
Frank reached around to Tony's control module on his chest.
I'm going to turn up your suit pressure. That should slow up the leak.
Frank turned up the pressure, causing the suit to inflate slightly, forcing Tony's arms and legs out to his sides.
Well, this isn't going to work,
Tony complained.
Yeah, you can't walk this way.
damn it! Where the hell is that water coming from?
Frank looked around Tony's suit, but was unable to find the leak.
Listen, Tony, I'm going to drop all your counterweight and max out your suit pressure. You'll float to the surface, and they can pull you in. Once you're on the surface, the water pressure will be lower than your suit pressure, so you should stop taking on water.
But my air will be leaking out,
Tony surmised.
Won't I start sinking again?
They should have you back on shore by then.
How are you going to get the pod in by yourself?
No problem. The winch is doing all the work. I'm just taking the pod for a little walk, he added,
as he turned Tony's suit pressure up to maximum, causing Tony's suit to inflate like a blow-up doll. Immediately, Tony began rising to the surface.
Lynn, Tony's floating to the surface. You need to get him to shore before all his air leaks out.
Start pulling him as fast as you can, Lynn ordered. Mac, help them pull Tony in, quickly.
What about the winch? Mac asked,
as he abandoned the ATUV and ran down to the water's edge to help Laura and Sarah.
I'll handle the winch, Lynn replied,
as she headed for the ATUV at the top of the sandy slope. Laura and Sarah started pulling on Tony's safety line, hand over hand, as fast as they could, with Mac joining them a moment later.
Start the winch,
Frank instructed over Lynn's comm set. Lynn arrived at the ATUV and activated the winch again, but its nose suddenly dug in deeper, and the entire vehicle started sliding forward. Lynn quickly shut it down.
Frank, the pod must be stuck. It's pulling the ATUV down.
Shut off the winch.
Already done.
Frank watched Tony float on the surface above him as he was slowly pulled onto shore.
How you doing, Tony?
I'm fine. Go check on the pod.
Frank turned around and looked at the pod. It was stuck in between two coral walls.
I see it. It's stuck on the reef. I'm on my way.
Frank started walking toward the trapped pod. He could hear squishing from inside his own suit as well, and realized his own feet were getting wet.
Shit.
What is it?
Lynn asked over the comm set.
Nothing,
Frank lied, not wanting her to worry. There was enough going on. Frank made his way underneath the edge of the pod, which was stuck about 1 meter above the ocean floor.
I'm going to try to push the pod up a bit. Stand by on the winch.
Standing by,
Lynn responded. Frank pushed with all his strength, but the pod wouldn't budge.
Damn, it's really stuck. I'm going to get my back under it and try pushing up with my legs.
Be careful, Frank,
Lynn warned.
That thing is heavy.
Most of its weight should be offset by the flotation collar, he reminded her.
He moved further under the pod and placed his back against the pod's heat shield. Again he pushed with all his might, groaning as he tried to move the massive pod. But still, it would not budge.
Shit!
Frank swore in frustration. He moved under the pod and out the front end. He climbed up the coral ridge, pulled out his hand pickaxe, and started chipping away at the coral.
Lynn, disengage the winch and back the ATUV up to the top of the hill. The winch line should be more than long enough.
What the hell for?
Lynn protested.
We need traction under the tires, and the higher angle might give me a little lift to get this damn thing unstuck.
Frank, maybe you should come in. We can rethink this thing and try again later.
Just do it, Lynn. I've got water up to my knees, and I don't have time to argue with you.
Frank, get out of the water.
Not until I get this fucking pod free. It's now or never, so move it.
Lynn released the winch brake and climbed into the driver's seat.
Stand by on that line, Laura, she ordered,
as she started up the ATUV and slipped it into gear.
Where are you going? I've got to back this thing up to higher ground. What?
Laura had no idea what was going on as Lynn started backing up the hill full speed, the winch line paying out as she backed away. Frank finished chipping away the coral on one side of the pod. He pulled the rocks out of his pockets to decrease his ballast as more water leaked into his suit. It was up to mid-thigh now. He climbed across the pod and onto the other side and began to chip away at the coral again.
I'm at the top of the hill, Frank,
Lynn announced over the comm set.
Stand by. I'm almost ready.
Frank finished chipping away the last of the coral, impeding the pod on that side. He climbed back over to the previous side and jumped down to the seafloor, landing hard. He was even heavier now that the water was up to his waist. He moved back under the pod and again placed his back against the flotation collar.
"Start the winch, Lynn," he ordered,
as he pushed his back up against the pod. The pod slid forward half a meter. Coral broke away from the sides and tumbled down. Frank adjusted his stance and groaned loudly as he pushed as hard as he could with both legs. The pod started to move, only a centimeter at first. Then suddenly, it broke free, moving away quickly under the force of the winch. Frank fell backward, landing hard on his back. He felt something in his life support pack give way with a sharp snapping sound, followed by the hiss of escaping air. His comm set crackled, and then went completely dead, as the cable yanked away from its connection at the back of his helmet. The winch started taking up cable normally again.
"Frank, it's working!" Lynn called out over the comm set.
The hissing sound was still there. Frank looked at his wrist display. His oxygen pressure was dropping fast.
"Lynn?"
Frank called, suspecting that there would be no response. He got to his feet and started chasing the pod toward shore. The water was up to his abdomen now, and it was a struggle to maneuver. He emptied the rocks from his pockets as he moved and pulled the bags of rocks from his belt. It helped, but only a little. The water was coming in fast. Mac and the others had gotten Tony to the beach and were opening his faceplate. As they started taking off his helmet, the pod's nose finally broke the surface of the water.
"There it is!" Laura yelled. "Frank, we can see the pod!"
Frank didn't answer.
"Frank? Can you hear me?"
Lynn repeated.
"Frank!"
The water was now up to Frank's chest. He was getting cold and could barely move. There was still at least 7 meters of ocean over his head, and he had to be at least 40 meters from shore. The water in his suit was rising too fast, and he was running out of air. Lynn couldn't raise Frank on the comm set.
"Laura!"
she yelled from the hilltop.
"Pull him in, fast!"
Laura started pulling up the excess slack as fast as she could. Mac heard the fear in Lynn's voice and ran over to help Laura with Frank's safety line. Frank's breathing was shallow, and he was shivering from the bitter cold of the seawater. Frank slowly trudged along, barely able to make any headway against the weight of the water that now filled his suit up to his neck.
"What the hell went wrong?" he wondered.
Suddenly, there was a strong tug at his feet as the slack on his safety line was taken up, catching his foot and sending him tumbling over. He landed on his right side with a thud and a grunt. He tried to get back up, but the tether was pulling on him and kept him from finding his balance. Now that he was horizontal, the water in his suit was leaking up through his collar and sloshing around his face and head. He rolled clumsily onto his back to get his face above the waterline inside his own suit. Coughing and sputtering, Frank accidentally took in several mouthfuls of seawater.
"I can't pull in the line," Laura yelled. "I think it's stuck."
Laura let go of the rope to reposition herself and allow Mac some room in front of her. Frank knew he had one chance. He hit the release on his life support pack harness, dropping the heavy pack onto the seafloor below him. Taking in a deep breath and holding it, he twisted his helmet release ring and allowed the helmet to finish filling with water. Then he removed the helmet and dropped it away as well. Mac stepped in front of Laura and positioned himself on Frank's tether.
"Ready? Pull!"
The rope suddenly pulled at Frank as he tried to untie it from around his waist. The rope pinched his finger, crushing it and ripping the skin, sending a stream of bright red blood into the water. It was all Frank could do to keep from screaming out in pain and letting the last of his precious air out of his lungs. He reached down with his left hand, pulling out the knife that Mac had lent him, and cut the rope. On the surface, the rope suddenly gave way, sending Mac and Laura tumbling backward.
"What the fuck?"
Mac cried out as he got back to his feet and started pulling the rope in madly. The pod was now safely beached, and Lynn shut down the winch and ran down the sandy hill to join the others. Finally free of the rope, Frank was only seconds from drowning. He spotted his life support pack only a meter away still releasing precious oxygen, sending a stream of bubbles to the surface. He grabbed the pack and placed his lips over the leak, carefully sucking in the last little trickle of oxygen as he tried not to choke on the water that came along with it. With a new breath of air, Frank now had an extra minute. He unzipped the torso from the leg section of his suit and removed it, then kicked off the lower section. The water was freezing, and he could hardly think, but the bubbles reminded him what to do, and after sucking in one last breath of oxygen from the leaking life support pack, he followed them to the surface. Instinctively, he kicked his legs and moved his arms in the way that Tony had demonstrated. It might not have been graceful, but it was working. He was moving slowly toward the surface. In the back of his mind, he remembered Tony saying something about breathing out while you ascended. "Something about my lungs exploding." He continued to kick, even though he couldn't feel his feet. He continued to move his arms, even though he couldn't feel his hands. His mind was starving for oxygen, and he didn't know where he was or what he was doing. All he knew was that something was telling him to get to the surface. His hearing was gone. He was surrounded by silence. His vision was dimming around the edges, and all he could see were the bubbles he was chasing to the surface. Mac pulled the last of Frank's tether in, stopping when he reached the frayed end where it had been cut. He held it up and looked at it in disbelief, as did everyone else. Frank's head broke the surface, gasping for air as he slipped back under.
"There he is!"
Laura screamed. Frank's vision was coming back from the fresh dose of oxygen in his lungs. His head came up again, and he took another breath before he went under. Everyone ran to the water to help, but he was too far away. Mac went in up to his chest, but couldn't go any further without drowning.
"Get me out of this suit," Tony demanded. "I can help him."
Maria was closest and began taking off Tony's life support pack, with Laura quickly joining in. Lynn stood helplessly, watching through her viewscope as Frank bobbed up and down, his arms flailing in the surf, trying desperately to keep his head above water.
"Don't take your eyes off him, Lynn," Mac demanded.
Lynn kept her viewscope trained on Frank, zooming in further.
"Oh my God," she gasped. "He's not wearing his suit."
Frank could hear the others yelling from shore and could see where he was. Unfortunately, with the return of cognitive thought, came fear. He tried to think, tried to remember what Tony had told him about how to swim, but he was freezing, and he still couldn't feel his extremities. The best he could do was flop his arms around and kick a little. As the rolling waves raised him up momentarily, he could see that someone was going into the water from the shore. If he could just stay afloat long enough. Finally free of his suit, Tony ran into the water to rescue Frank. He wasn't graceful, but he was swimming, much to the amazement of everyone on the beach.
"Hurry, Tony," Lynn prayed aloud. "Lynn, get the ATUV down here," Maria ordered.
She knew that both of them were going to be hypothermic. There were a few jackets in the ATUV, but that wouldn't be enough. They were going to have to get them back to the ship as quickly as possible and warm them up. Tony swam as best he could remember, but he was tired, and he was also cold. He finally reached Frank and tried to grab him, but Frank was thrashing about like a madman, and Tony had to push him away to keep from being pulled under himself. He turned to look at the shore. It was only 15 meters away. Tony waved his arm at the shore. Lynn saw him as she pulled the ATUV to a stop by the others and immediately understood.
"Give me Tony's comm boy,"
she ordered as she picked up his safety line. Mac grabbed the boy and handed it to Lynn. She quickly disconnected the tether and then tied the free end of Tony's safety line.
"Can you reach him with this?"
she asked Mac as she handed him the boy.
"Watch me,"
Mac replied confidently. He ran out into the water until he was thigh-deep himself, while Lynn prepared the rest of the line to keep it from becoming tangled. Mac heaved the boy, sending it directly over Tony's head. The boy splashed down a few meters past Tony. He grabbed it and tied it around his chest. Then he fought through Frank's thrashing and grabbed him around the chest with his left arm. He held him tightly, begging him to calm down. Then he waved his other arm at Lynn. Maria, Laura, and Sarah pulled on his line, quickly drawing them in. As they pulled Tony and Frank to shore, Lynn released the clamps holding the winch to the ATUV's bumper and dropped it to the sand. Finally, Tony was close enough to stand up in the surf. He managed to drag Frank 2 steps toward the beach before a wave knocked them back down. Mac and Sarah went running out into the water to help drag them to shore and into the ATUV. Maria and Lynn climbed into the back of the vehicle, along with Tony and Frank, as Mac jumped behind the wheel.
"Secure that pod as best you can," Lynn ordered, as they started to pull away. "I'll send Mac back to pick you up."
In the back of the ATUV, Maria and Lynn wrapped Frank and Tony in jackets, trying to keep them warm. Both of them were shivering and blue.
Did you get the pod?
Frank asked, through his chattering teeth.
Yes, Frank, Lynn answered. We got it.
Day 5. This was my 3rd day spent wandering the general area again, collecting rock samples here and there. I have determined that this valley was cut over countless centuries by the river that lies at its base. However, I suspect that some of the surrounding peaks were formed by geological or volcanic forces long before the river did its damage. All in all, it was quite an enjoyable day. I probably won't have another day to myself for quite some time. It seems Jack has determined our position relative to where he suspects the LRV would have landed. Unfortunately, it is at least 400 kilometers away. Jack calculates that we should be able to hike there in about 30 days. Perhaps all those hours you forced me to spend on the treadmill will be of use after all. Surprisingly enough, when faced with my reluctance to accompany him, Jack offered a compromise, agreeing to return to our camp if the journey becomes too difficult. But I fear history would judge me harshly if I chose not to strive forward and try to rejoin the others. However, despite Jack's celestial navigation capabilities and his orbital surface scans, I worry that we may become hopelessly lost in the vast wilderness of this world. I'm not sure if it's my fear of history's judgment or my own scientific curiosity that compels me to follow him on this journey, although I suspect it is the latter. The opportunity to study the geology of this planet over a broader area excites me. Tomorrow, we will spend our day preparing for our journey, departing the following day. As rustic and dirty as our little camp is, I will miss its familiarity. But I suppose, if I can get used to this, I can get used to anything. Lynn paced back and forth across the wardroom deck, unable to join the others in their evening meal. They had made it back to camp just before sunset. Frank had lost consciousness along the way, so Mac and Tony had carried him directly to the med lab as soon as the vehicle had come to a stop. Fortunately, Tony only needed a hot shower and a little rest, but Maria had been in the med lab with Frank for over an hour, and Lynn was really beginning to worry.
"Lynn," Laura begged, "would you please sit down and eat something?"
"No, thanks. I'm not hungry."
"Well, would you at least stop pacing? You're making me nervous. Besides, you're going to wear a hole in the deck."
Lynn didn't notice Laura's attempt at humor, or her request.
"If he just would have listened to me," Lynn lamented, "he wouldn't be in there now." "He'll be all right."
The door to the med lab opened, and Maria stepped out, closing the door behind her. Lynn immediately stopped pacing and looked at Maria.
"How's he doing?"
"His vitals are stable, and his labs look good so far," Maria explained, sitting down.
"What do you mean, so far?" Sarah asked.
"He swallowed a lot of seawater, maybe even aspirated a little as well."
"Yeah, but it's just water, right?"
Mac wondered, coming in from his workout in the next compartment to hear Maria's report.
"Like I said before, there are a few elements in that seawater the test kit couldn't identify. I don't even know if they were biological or not. Besides, aspiration alone can be a very serious problem."
"What could that do to him?" Lynn asked.
"Disease, systemic infections, electrolyte problems, any number of things."
"When will we know?"
Laura questioned.
"I should have a better idea by morning."
"Is he awake?"
Lynn asked.
"Yes, but he's very weak right now. His core temp is still below normal, but it's coming up slowly."
"Can I see him?"
Maria looked at Lynn. She knew that it would be better to let Frank rest, but she could tell by the look in Lynn's eyes that she needed to see him. Command was a terrible burden, especially for someone so young.
Okay, but only for a few minutes. He needs to rest.
Thanks, Lynn said, as she headed for the med lab. Lynn opened the door slowly, entering the room as carefully and quietly as possible. Frank was lying on the exam table in the middle of the compartment, covered by a special blanket that circulated a heated fluid through it. A clear plastic oxygen mask covered his face, fogging and clearing with each breath. He had an intravenous line leading from his left arm to a bag of fluid hanging from a bracket attached to the ceiling. The tube was fed through an IV pump that controlled the flow of fluid to his body. Lynn stood there for a moment, silent in the dimly lit compartment, afraid to say anything. A painful memory from her childhood came to her. She was probably 5 or 6 years old. Her mother was dying from low-gravity deterioration syndrome, an incurable disease at the time. Against her wishes, her father had forced her and her older brother to come to their dying mother's bedside to say goodbye. Her mother had stroked her hair and made her promise to be a good girl, to take care of her father and brother, and to speak of her often to her own children on the New World. The New World. It was a glorious dream promised to all of the children of her generation, the last generation to be born and raised aboard the Daedalus. Some new world this is turning out to be, she thought bitterly as she approached the bed. Frank's eyes opened slowly as she drew near. His skin was pale, his hand frighteningly cold in her own.
Hey, Lenny, he whispered from behind the mask. Hey.
Lynn fought back the urge to cry. His voice was so weak. None of his booming laughter or humorous quips.
How's the pod?
It's fine. It's sitting on the beach, safe and sound. Mac and Tony will tow it back in the morning.
Sorry.
For what?
I should have listened when you told me to come back in.
You're right. You should have.
Frank coughed. The indicators on his monitoring panel jumped a bit, worrying her. But they settled back down after he finished.
Maybe I'll listen better next time, he promised.
You bet your ass you will.
Lynn squeezed his hand.
You just get better, you big lummox. We can't afford to lose anyone else.
Oh, geez, Lenny. I didn't know you cared.
Who am I going to get to keep this ship running if you check out?
Frank tried to laugh, but it only turned into a cough.
Maybe Sarah? He joked.
Same old Frank, Lynn thought.
Get some rest, Frankie.
That's an order, she added firmly.
Yes, ma'am, he obeyed, closing his eyes. Lynn placed his hand back at his side and backed away before turning to leave the room. He would be all right. Somehow. She just knew it. He had to be. She stepped out of the med lab and quietly closed the door before pausing to lean against it for a moment. She could feel the others in the next compartment waiting for her to return, waiting for some sign of reassurance that their friend would be all right. So she wiped the tears from her eyes, gathered her composure, and confidently strode back into the wardroom to tell the crew what they needed to hear.